Welcome to, it sounded like, oh, crap, hang on.
Perfect.
Welcome to It Sounded Like a Good Idea at the Time, a fresh in the trenches dialogue about all things that you've been thinking about womanhood, motherhood, from decidedly non-experts. I am one of the non-experts, Caroline.
And I'm the other one, Hannah.
And we are so glad that you decided to spend time with us today.
We have been really excited to start this, and we hope you love it.
It's our first episode, if you haven't been able to tell. One of the things that we really want to make sure that we cover each week is something that is just really bringing us joy each week. So something that we're loving. It can be something small that we're listening to, something we're eating, something we've discovered. So it seemed like the first episode was a great time to kick that off. Hannah, what is something that you are loving this week?
Something that I'm loving. So I'll explain what I love about this at the end. The thing that I've discovered from a New York Times article is this new idea called tiny books, which are basically they're trying to redo books. It's like a experiment now with just some, like John Green has partnered up with, I think it's Dutton Publishing, I gotta confirm, but they're trying to make books just more like the size of your smartphone. And you read it like you would, like, it's like they give you a book, but then when you open it, you actually turn it the other way, like vertically.
Yeah, notepad style.
Yeah, notepad style. And then the paper is thin as onion skin, and you're supposed to just be able to flick it up with like one thumb. So just like you're scrolling on your phone. And what I love about this is just that it's a new idea. And when it comes to like consuming books, like I like options because I love my Kindle. It's my favorite thing that I own. I'm very emotionally attached to it. And I know some people are like, no, I have to have real books. So maybe this kind of bridges the gap between having like something small you can fit in one hand. It isn't that big a deal. I think they're supposed to lay flat. Like they're not, they're like designed very specifically. They look Swedish or Danish. Huh. So we know they're legit.
Yeah. But it's funny that you talk about books because as a fellow bookworm and literary nerd, the thing I'm loving this week is actually about classic books. And by that, I mean hardbound, hard copy books. I'm interested in the fact that you love your Kindle because I have constantly thought about getting a Kindle, but I feel too prideful about my love of hard books. I'm like, okay, sucker, watch me haul around these 12 pounds of hardbound books.
You look stupid with your electronic device.
Exactly.
I look like a scholar.
I look like a major scholar, and I'm avoiding, what is it, a computer neck that they say, like from the way your head is tilted in an angle, which I'm constantly paranoid that I have. So I read my books chin up.
That is hilarious. It's my literacy neck, suckers. You don't have to get those blue glasses or whatever for screens.
Yeah.
I mean, you're missing out. Like, those are trendy now. So.
I'm just missing everywhere. I prefer to hang out with my BFF Dewey Decimal at the library. And yesterday, after my three kids went to bed, I had the opportunity to do whatever I wanted for about 10 minutes. I decided to scroll some popular book titles, and I was looking at my library to see where they were available because today I was going to pass about three different library branches and wanted to maximize where I could get the most books. And lo and behold, you can put them on hold online, which I'm sure is not a new concept to anyone who's been reading for, 7 years. But for me,
7 years,
it was a brand new thing. So they emailed me today to let me know that they're ready to pick up tomorrow. And I just think the whole process is easier. Typically, I take my 4-month-old, almost 2-year-old and almost 4-year-old with me. And for some reason in the libraries here where we are recording in Charlotte, the kids section and the adult fiction section are on opposite sides of the library.
Yes, that drives me crazy.
Nightmare.
It's like the kids section, the DVDs, magazines, aka all the things I don't want them flipping through. And then like all the way on the other side. And I'm like, you people couldn't have put this a little bit more convenient so I could do even something without like having to leave them on the other side of the library. And it clearly says, do not leave your children. I can't even.
It clearly says that. And to me, it just makes me realize that libraries must have been designed by men.
For sure.
Because no woman would design a library that way.
Yeah.
So it's a disaster from start to finish. But this way, maybe it will be less of a headache, kind of like drive through groceries.
Yeah, totally. I mean, libraries seem to be like way different. I do not remember libraries being as cool now either. Like, that's why kids don't want to leave. Like, they're
right.
Like little play areas. And I just don't remember that library being like that when I was little or I don't know. Maybe they were and I was going to lame libraries, but.
I was going to libraries in East Tennessee, so I can assure you they were pretty lame. Sorry, listeners in East Tennessee. I love you. Go Vols. But I do love that our libraries, you're the worst. Ours do have computers, which my kids are fascinated by, but I think that they are still running like Microsoft DOS because the programs are like so slow.
They have dial up
for
internet.
My kids.
It's like,
mom, don't pick up the phone. But for my kids, they are fascinated because we don't play computer games. So
yes,
they love it.
That's exactly. I'm like, let's go to the library. And they're like, can we play the computers? And I'm like,
that's exactly why we're here. Forget the books. We're here for you to get screen time on
and
a
like,
foreign technology.
All these other people are there and like moms are at the table, like, and they have a stack of books or like a stack of work and they're doing stuff with their kids. That's like so educational. And I'm like, Milan, sit there. Shh.
Don't talk. Yeah. Don't talk. Don't touch anything. It is funny that you say that because oddly enough, as much as I always have like 4 library books for myself at any given time, I've been a parent now for 4 years and I have never checked out a children's book from the library
don't do it.
For my
don't
kids.
Do it. I will tell you why, because I have paid the library system like $25 on a torn book because I got a book when Milan was little and he like slipped on it and tore the page and they were like, let's just look at it. And they looked at it and they're like, okay, well, we can't fix this. You'll have to buy a new one. It's $25. And I'm like, $25 for this small children's book. And they're like, well, yeah, we have to get it rebound. We have to get this special wrapping.
Of course.
And we have to get it renumbered. And I'm like, that was like the last time. That was like 3 years ago. I've like never checked out a book since then.
You're way more honest than me that you just walked it in because I had 2 books on the same trip. One, my dog completely chewed apart. The other fell into the bathtub because, you know, trying to invest in some self-care for me. I was reading in the bathtub, fell in, and instead of approaching any librarians about it, I just slid them into the book return as though no one would notice that they were completely destroyed.
Like, no, I got it like that.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know why you guys have such shoddy books
when
here
I
on the shelves.
When I received it, it had these dog marks in it. So, yeah, I would like to speak to your manager.
You're right. I promptly got an email letting me know exactly how much I owed, and it was enough to buy a library. So.
Seriously? That's why, like, I fear them coming on to me. Like, I fear them being like, oh, she was trying to cheat the system. She thought we wouldn't know. Like, that whole thing, and then them of, like, sending me an email or, like, tracking me down more than I'm, like, I'd rather just be like, I'm a good Samaritan.
I'm so sorry.
I'm doing the right thing here.
Also, I'm voting early today. Do you have any extra stickers? I'm that great of a citizen. It brings up a good point. Clearly, our personalities are one that are okay being a little bit nerdy. Even our reactions to how we dealt with destroyed books shows a lot about personalities. And I know when I was a socially awkward, not super accepted preteen, I loved doing personality profiles that let me know whether I should approach my crush, which they always told me I should. And let me tell you, the success rate of that was 0.
Did you approach a crush?
Yes. Ryan H, if you're listening to this. When I approached you in 6th grade and said, I kind of think that we should be boyfriend and girlfriend. And you looked at me and said, I don't.
Ryan H, you D-bag.
I know. Sorry. I know that you're very successful in your life. Thanks to Facebook. I'm just letting you know that wasn't me. It was Teen Magazine that told me I should do that.
I can't believe I'm impressed that you did that because I never, ever, like, I would just never approach anyone. It's just funny. It's the exact opposite the way I want my kids to be. Like, I'm like, do it. Tell someone if you like them. It's no big deal. Because of course now I'm like, it is literally no big deal. It matters 0%.
And I'm more like, never speak to a boy because they will just make you feel really bad. Because Ryan H turned me down. Andrew H turned me down. I'm all for the H's.
H's are not mm-hmm. your
Will
forte.
William E turned me down. So, you know, spoiler alert, I'm happily married with 3 beautiful children. He didn't turn me down, but I also didn't make
Suck
the first
it,
move.
William E, so. Ryan H, and Andrew H. You 3 are missing out.
But it's kept me fascinated with learning things about my personality. So there are a few different schools of thought now on personality tests. I think that it's always a great idea relationally to know each other's love languages or personality type or Myers-Briggs. And I think it's important to know about yourself through different times of life.
Yeah, I totally agree. I definitely took like every single quiz that a magazine told me to take ever, but I didn't start digging into these real legit personality tests until college when I was just trying to figure out, like, I wanted someone to tell me what to do. And that's when I first did the Myers-Briggs. And probably the most interesting thing I got out of that, and I did like the Myers-Briggs, and then I did this whole thing at the Career Center, but I did something. And again, like, you know, the Myers-Briggs is so detailed, so I can't remember if it was from this or another one, but something came back saying like, you will go out of your way to do something the hard way. And I like, it like hit me. I do that. Just as an example, I have these gym shoes that I love, these Nikes, and the shoelaces are slippery. And so for, it had to have been like a year I was wearing them, and they would constantly come untied, and I would tuck them in, and I kept, I was Googling. I'm like, do these people, like other people have problems? Like, what is the solution?
Has anyone heard of this brand Nike and why they're selling these crap shoes?
To a manager. And so I'm in this prenatal workout class when I was pregnant with Maya. And I say that because my shoelace had come untied. And so the teacher of the class came up to me, and she was like, oh, I got it. And I'm like, oh, it just keeps coming untied. And of course she wanted to help me out because I was pregnant. And she's like, just double knot it. And I'm like, oh.
Thanks a lot, Google, for not putting that at the top of the list.
There are ENFJs on there having the same problems with their Nike shoelaces.
Have you taken the Myers-Briggs since then? Since
no,
college?
I haven't taken it since then.
So I took it for entry into a job. It was a requirement that we went over it with a counselor to make sure that basically the job that we were being hired for was a decent fit for our personality.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was really cool. Though, having it tied to
your employment.
Job. Yeah, I would love to take it again.
What would you all want me to put?
Right. Well, because, you know, to really, really get a clear picture of your personality, it shouldn't be done under pressure.
Right, exactly. Right?
But mine came back as an INFJ, and I felt like it was wholly accurate for me. But I have felt like other tests that I've taken have changed a lot. So I always identify as an INFJ, and I think there's enough middle child in me to want to be and feel super special. And so I love that INFJs are supposedly the rarest of all. So I'm like, I am an INFJ.
Oh, you're something else. Well, that's precious.
Oh, you're an E. Oh, I'm sorry about that. So I think that that is probably part of the personality that I want to feel unique, even though I am very basic and pretty average. But I like to be able to say I'm an INFJ, which I think a lot of INFJs do, because I feel like I do know quite a few.
I do know. I have another. Yeah, I have another good friend who's an INFP. So that's a little different. But peasant.
Oh. Yeah, P for peasant.
I wonder what, because I was looking in the ENFJ, 2% of people are ENFJs. So I wonder if the NFJ, because the N is...
Oh, right.
I'm trying to remember what the N is. It's a... I know the J is justice. What's the F?
F is feeling.
Oh, that checks out.
N is intuition.
Yeah, yeah. And then the E is extrovert, and introvert is I. So yeah, I was like, maybe I would be more of an introvert now. I think I'm kind of on the line.
Ugh. I feel like the older I get, the more hermity I get, which means my I gets stronger. But I am an extroverted introvert. People don't really believe that I'm an introvert, but I will be your prize pig. If you want to put me if you want to trot me out for a show, again, and middle child, probably if we got into astrological signs, Leo, I like to be in the spotlight for a minute, but then I want to not have any contact with any humans ever again.
You need to charge up
so
alone.
I can turn it out when I need to. Yeah. But then like paparazzi leave me alone.
This is so tiring. This is my life, everyone.
God, this is exhausting. But it's made it interesting as a parent to realize kids never leave you alone. And I don't really want them to in some way. I want them to know that I'm fully accessible and fully available. I never want to set up some kind of boundary where it's like, oh, we can't bother mommy now. Yeah. You know what I mean? But it does leave me feeling very depleted at the end of the day. And based on my career. Yeah. Feel it too. Yeah, so the depletion
is
real
either
way.
It's just draining. Like you're just on. It's a lot to be on all day, every day. And it's tough because, yeah, you're like, well, I don't want them to feel like I'm unapproachable. What I struggle with is, yes, I want them to feel like they can always come to me. But then I'm like, okay, but you can't treat everyone this way. It's not real life right? for you to just run up and yell and get in people's face and not be like, that can't happen. I can't just like send them out there like doing this, because that's like the one negative-ish feedback I got from Milan's school last year, because they were like, he's so great. He's so polite. We love him. He gets real close to people. And I'm like, that's amazing. Like,
what I got from Norbeth, she is almost four, from her preschool last year was, it's really obvious that you spend a lot of time with her because she would rather play with the teachers than the kids. And they said, she's great with the kids. She's super social, but she really just wants the teachers to hang out with her. Growing up, I was that way. I wanted all the grown-ups to be my friend. And so when I was socially awkward chasing after Ryan H. and Andrew H., and I had no real friends
losers
of my own.
That they are.
I still am watching you. I liked to hang out with my mom's friends.
That's interesting.
Because I felt adored.
That's interesting. That's why I would love to dig deeper into myself if I'm like actually an introvert. I think that I'm still technically an extrovert. I just still need to like recharge occasionally, because I do feel charged as the battery gets charged by social situations. Mm-hmm. Like if I am like very tired and like we have our family coming over, I'll sit there and think, oh man, I'm so dead. I shouldn't have planned something. But then within 10 minutes of everyone being there, my headache is gone. I feel better. I just feel, oh man, I'm so glad I kept these plans. I always end up feeling better. Adults, friends, family, that really charges me. So I don't actually think I'm more introverted. I think I just value alone time. And I think that's mainly because of having two small children.
Well, and as a people pleaser and someone who didn't have, I struggled socially for a while, but I think there's a part of me that is just craves acceptance. So anytime I get invited to anything, I'm so excited to say yes. I'm like rabidly excited to say yes
really?
To it. And within 10 minutes of accepting it, I'm frantically looking for a way out of it. Which is partially why I had kids, because no one can question if I'm like, hey, sorry, something came up with the kids.
She threw up. I don't know
what's going on. She's not acting.
She's a fever right. of 98.9. So I will right. not be
it's
attending.
Very, yeah, we need to watch that. I panic trying to find a way out of being obligated to it. Literally, there is about 1% of the time that if someone else cancels, I'm not thankful that they did that.
Yeah, that's true. Even if it's
I'm always like,
like
oh,
my best
man.
Friends and I was like excited. You know, it's like someone I'm excited. I'm like, oh, thank God.
Oh, yeah. It's never anything.
Personal.
It's never personal. I think part of it, again, as it's gotten worse in parenthood, is I am so wholly obligated.
Yeah.
To caring for my kids and being on. And my husband works a pretty unconventional schedule where I'm home with them a lot.
Yeah, he's a chef.
He's a chef. So he works weekends. He works nights. He works very long days. Like this morning, Halloween, when we were recording this, he worked 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. So that meant I did my work and got the kids ready and to school and again, worked all day, then did all the trick-or-treating and whatever.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Solo. But I feel so obligated to provide that for them and probably to compensate for the time that he isn't home, that then it's like I have no emotional energy for any other obligations. So I like find myself shedding other obligations.
Yeah, even for him probably too, right? You know, he comes home and just kind of wants to like download with you and you're like, I have zero ability to do that at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. Like I get so excited when he wants to sit down and talk to me, but at the same time, like I feel myself wandering into other things that I need to be doing. And it's something that I completely have to check myself. And so that's where this other personality test, I call it the new personality test because it's new to me, but I think you'll probably correct me on that.
Yes, it is quite old.
Go ahead, fill me in. To me, it just launched yesterday. So you
guys,
ahead.
I have this brand new information. You will.
Hot take.
Yeah, the Enneagram, it's like super old, I think. I just am always fascinated by stuff that's like been around for a long time. And we like either still use it or just discovering it again. It just kind of goes to show you how there is nothing new under the sun.
Yeah, that's true. David loves the Enneagram. His counselor recommended that he take it. And he was immediately fascinated by his results and asked me to take it, which I did and felt like it pegged me super well. And I don't know if it's because I've took it like 10 years after I took the Myers-Briggs. So it felt felt the most relevant, but I felt like it gave such a full picture of who both of us are. And what I, when I was looking at it, one thing that I noted, because I was looking at how is it different, because I want to know the one that is most right. Mainly, I want to know the good things about myself that are most that are most accurate. Don't tell me what I need to work on. I have no weaknesses. Tell me what's great. Basically, the synopsis that I found was Enneagram really looks at the nurture side of what how you respond societally, essentially, like what you've learned, where Myers-Briggs spends more time on nature. So what you're born with, what's innate in you. And so together, it's a great picture. But I do think in our roles as women, our roles as moms, our roles as wives, there's a lot of nurture to that that the Enneagram provides.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I actually like looking at what these tests say are my weakness, because it gives me like the vocabulary to explain myself. I feel like a lot of times in like discussions with Poisson where we're having like a miscommunication or something, I'm like, I don't know. I just was thinking that or something. Like, I'm just like, I can't really explain it. So it helps me to see where they're like, oh, well, one of your weaknesses is that you're so caught up in your enthusiastic idea for something that you'll like push everything else aside or something. Like, it just gives you a way to like explain yourself. And I think when you can understand that, oh, well, hey, I do that. Like, that's a thing. Then it gives you a chance to either work through it or like learning about yourself just is only ever helpful.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, so if you're not familiar with the Enneagram, I'm sure that at some point you've seen Myers-Briggs. If you haven't taken it, the combo of four letters that Hannah mentioned earlier, the Enneagram basically classifies everyone into one of nine different categories. But what I also like about it is it gives you a secondary category that they call wings. So you may be a two, which is what I am.
Me too.
But you also have this wing, but it gives you this wing of under certain situations, you flip to this other number, which is great because I think it gives a whole picture of, yeah, mostly I'm like this, but if I'm feeling stressed or if I'm in an ideal circumstance, I'm more this way.
Yeah, exactly. And that also can help you when you're in that situation, like know in advance what to prepare for.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, how am I going to be in this situation? Like, I have noticed lately in my life that like, if I don't know a situation is coming up or if I'm not expecting a conversation, just in any different situation, something will come up, someone will say something and I just like wasn't prepared for it. I just find myself later kicking myself thinking like, I like have actual intelligent things to say and now I just can't think of any of it.
I'll
slay
you with my rhetoric later. Come back.
Yeah, I'm going to be writing you a letter.
You can expect to receive it in 2 days.
It's good to know like how you will react under stress.
Yeah, I was going to read just the title and the type for each nine, if you think that would be helpful for people in case that they're not familiar. So in the Enneagram, number ones are referred to as the reformer. They are rational, idealistic, principled, purposeful, self-controlled, and perfectionistic.
This is Poisson.
Yeah, so he's a one.
For sure. Like one wing of one.
He is only a reformer. Number two, which is what Hannah and I both are the helper, which, hello, of course we are.
You are welcome, world.
We are here to make you better. We are caring, interpersonal, demonstrative, generous, people-pleasing, and possessive, which I almost dropped out of even reading on this thing because I try to avoid anything. I'm not really not self-critical. I just get self-conscious and like to ignore it. Number three, which is my wing. So I'm a two wing three, is the achiever, which is success oriented, pragmatic, adaptive, excelling, driven, and image conscious, which I can totally see, especially because I feel like I kind of split personalities where who I am at home and as a mom is a lot different than how I am as a professional. And so I think that I'm constantly swinging between those. So I think that encapsulates me well. Number four is the individualist, just sensitive, withdrawn, expressive, dramatic, self-absorbed, and temperamental, or basically like any 3 or 4 year old, I would say.
Yep. That checks out.
Five is the investigator. They're intense and cerebral, perceptive, innovative, secretive, and isolated. David is number six, the loyalist, committed, security-oriented, engaging, responsible, anxious, and suspicious, which 100% sums him up as well. Number seven is the enthusiast. Busy, fun-loving, spontaneous, versatile, distractible, and scattered. Number eight, the challenger, powerful, dominating, self-confident, decisive, willful, and confrontational, which I think is Maya, your 2 year old.
Is very true.
The last, number nine, is the peacemaker, which this is David's wing.
And mine too.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. I could see that. I wouldn't even have thought that, but yeah, I see it.
I wouldn't have thought that given how much you start arguments.
Yeah, given all that confrontation that you do. The peacemaker is easygoing, self-effacing, receptive, reassuring, agreeable, and complacent. So how do you as a two and Passan as a one see yourselves functioning in relationship?
I weirdly think that we completely balance each other out, and like somehow Milan and Maya will come out being like super even keeled because I get into something, and also like I will go to the mat for people. Like if someone that I like medium care about is like, man, I really need eggs and I don't have eggs in my household, I'll be like, all right, I'm gonna run to the store and buy you eggs.
Oh my gosh.
Like I just will. Like I'm like, what can I do for you? Like I will do it. I will be there. Whereas he's way more big picture. Okay, instead I'm gonna like go out and try and do my job that makes the world a better place. Mm-hmm. And he's way more realistic. I'm way more idealistic. So like I think in the middle we kind of find some balance. Mm-hmm. It definitely leads to confrontation because I see any sort of questioning of anything that I'm into as like a direct challenge. And like he sees it as he's just like, oh, I'm just presenting you with the facts. And I'm like, you're crushing my dreams and my soul. So that hurts. And we need counseling.
Yeah, right. Things are falling apart. When David and I were reading how twos and sixes are in relationship, so one of the articles that we found said twos and sixes are rarely in relationship with one another, which was very interesting.
Still in that 1-2%.
That's right. We're unique, suckas. It's funny because the potential trouble spots are exactly what we find ourselves in, where David is a six. Well, I'll say this. Our lifestyle works out well in that we are both very independent and we don't need each other around all the time, which means it can be a while and we realize, oh my gosh, like we haven't spent any time with one another. I'm not even talking about like co-parenting stuff. We just are completely on our own planets. We're not even really communicating schedules because they rarely overlap anyway. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot that like I'll do during the day that like he doesn't even know about because I just don't share it. I don't need to.
Right.
And he doesn't ask about it because he doesn't feel the need to know. But that ultimately breeds resentment that I feel like he isn't asking. He feels like I'm not telling. We're both kind of at odds about that. And then he can be very laid back. And as a two that leans into a three who's high achieving, task oriented, we can feel friction in me constantly pushing, him being much slower to move. And then we're both just kind of pushing against each other friction wise. But what he is so wonderful at is I never have to doubt how he feels about us. Like he is so loyal to us and just his roots are really deep. You know, a six is the loyalist. Like I know by being with us, like there's nothing that I have to fear. You know, there's just so, so much consistency, which as a two helps me kind of thrive and be able to be kind of all over the place, helping people. Like you said, my love language is to bring people meals. So I just,
yeah, you are always doing that.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm a feeder, but as a two, it lets me do that. Because he's so steady that I can like really pour myself into something without fear of what that will shake in our relationship. Well, the last thing that I want to talk about in this episode is about the love languages.
Yes, this is so
both in chatting about Myers-Briggs and the Enneagram and Gary Chapman's The Five Love Languages is one that, again, I really like to see the difference between taking it the very first time when I didn't have kids and probably wasn't married to taking it recently as a married mom of three, because I was pretty sure I knew where it would land and it was exactly where I thought it would.
Have you actually read the book?
Nope. I just skipped to the survey in the back.
Yeah, me neither. This is one of those things like you could just make the site.
Right. Just give it. There's a free quiz in the back. I have read the one that is for offices, like corporate love languages.
Oh, I didn't even know that was a thing.
I wouldn't have read it, but I had to for work. It was good. It was good. I recommend it. It's also by Gary Chapman. It's The Five Languages of Appreciation or something butchered. I'll put it in the episode notes.
I definitely think I didn't take it before, but I think I would have changed. So I would like to guess what your current ones are.
Oh, okay.
The options are acts of service, quality time, physical touch, receiving gifts, words of affirmation. So I'm going to guess that your top or tied mm-hmm. top mm-hmm. one is, I'm going to guess, acts of service and words of affirmation.
Ooh, you nailed my two. Those are exactly order too. I would say yours, if I had to guess, is quality time and acts of service.
Actually, no.
Dang it. I don't know you at all.
No, I took this again. I really thought it would be acts of service. They're all high. It's 9, 8, 7, 5. Physical touch is one.
Yeah, physical touch is way off of my list. We're touched all day, every day.
Like every second of my life is physical touch. The top one this time is words of affirmation. But I have taken it before, like I think maybe a year or two ago. And the top one was acts of service. And I can definitely see how that's different now. Like, it is very true that, like, a way that someone could show me they loved me is filling up my car with gas.
Yes.
But for, like, you to say, like, oh, we were all talking and you did a good job. No one would even have to, like,
we
do anything nice for me.
And you did.
Like, all I, you know, like, all I need is Passan to come home and be like, you're a great mom. And I'm like, huh, nothing matters. I'm fine. I'm in a good mood.
To me, the number one thing that David could say to me is, I don't know how you do it.
Yes.
That to me is yes. Like, that fills my cup forever. Because it to me, it's like, he is acknowledging that I'm doing something difficult and in that I'm doing it well. And that to me is like so simple, but that is the biggest compliment.
Yeah. Words of affirmation. Like even like that's literally all I need. It's so funny that you said that.
Well, the reason that I said quality time for you is you have had really great conversations with me before about one, how nice it is to have conversations without being interrupted by. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I say that to you all the time.
That what you really love is just being able to have interaction with people like during what would be a transaction. So like,
yes,
standing in the kitchen when we drop the kids off and chatting right. for a little bit.
I think that would apply more to my like my friends, like quality time mm-hmm. for sure. And then with Passan, words of affirmation. Maybe that's like the dynamic, I think.
What are Passan's?
Quality time is his.
Well, what's interesting to me is forever, David assumed that mine was quality time. And quality time is probably my second lowest to touch.
It's my second lowest too.
But it's interesting in a relationship that that's what he assumed mine was. And so we were like, feel like something is real off here because like, stop wanting to hang out with me. And he's like, why aren't you receiving what I'm
trying
to
give me some freaking
love?
Space.
Yeah, really.
Why are you clinger. Receiving my love?
Which is funny since we don't even get to spend that much time together. But it's like, it's just not that. Again, it feels like an obligation to me. Though the book that I haven't read, but I do know this part, does make sure to list that quality time is different than quantity of time. And so that does make a difference for me because quality time can be a very short snippet of time. Like I've found with my kids, if they're acting cuckoo bananas, if I can just give them 7 to 10 minutes of uninterrupted time that is just theirs, it smooths so many edges where they feel like they were with me.
That's
but for
interesting.
Me, I don't have to invest 2 hours per child because it's just, it doesn't make sense. But if I can put my phone away, if we can turn a show off, and if Norbeth wants to play Candyland twice, that is the perfect amount of time. And then she feels like we have really spent time together.
That is a really good tip. I have to remember that. I feel like my mind doesn't automatically go to, you know, they're kind of losing it. Oh, spend more time with them.
Right. Like, get me out of here.
Yeah, I mean, that's I don't know that I would have figured that out without like hearing it from someone.
Yeah, I read another quote that I'm not going to remember, but the basis of it, and I do feel like at least for my girls, it really is true that your job as a parent is just not to feed into their dramatic, but to try to diffuse the situation. So I feel like when I get worked up, when they're worked up, we both just feed into each other. But like if they're really losing it, if I can just pick them up and hug them and just give them me, it diffuses it so much faster. But if I just start lobbying threats or consequences, it never goes well. That to me, it's interesting. It's not, I've had to challenge myself in that area. And even like we were saying earlier, if David wants to download about his day and I'm just like in my headspaces in a million other places, I have found that we both benefit from me tuning in. It's the same that if I want to talk to him and I feel like he's playing a game on his phone, I feel really rejected in that. You know, I really feel the benefit of all of the love languages, though I would say that quality time is low to me. But it's funny, physical touch is my lowest, but I am very affectionate with my kids.
Yeah, I mean, they're getting it all right now. Like, that makes total sense to me because we're moms of young children. Like, I definitely think when I was younger, like, okay, before I had the kids, I'm sure that receiving gifts would have been my number one.
Oh, interesting.
Probably physical touch would have been my second. Like I really used to like holding hands. Now I feel like sometimes I want to hold hands just because I feel like I should want to hold hands. Right. I'm like, I'm
or
really
to feel
okay.
like what an adult hand feels like.
Yeah, exactly. Which doesn't, I don't know. I'm like, I don't know. I'm trying this. Neither one of us wants to do this.
Are we liking it? No. Okay.
Yeah. Is this a thumbs down all around?
Right.
But yeah, now receiving gifts is still up there. But I honestly think it would be words of affirmation and then acts of service. My current score put receiving gifts as second, but I think I maybe answered something wrong.
Well, and I have always been words of affirmation. That's always been my first. Like, I kind of feel like I can relate to Nora Beth in that. Sometimes it feels like my cup is never full enough of affirmation. Mm-hmm. You know, they just wear off quickly. And my mom said about me one time, you don't just want to be liked, you want to be adored. And it's true. And so words of affirmation like fills that cup for me in a like kind of gross part of my heart. Right. But acts of service like actually delivers something much more fulfilling. So I want words of affirmation, but it's kind of like junk food that I go through really quickly. But acts of service like that feels more sacrificial. For somebody to do that for me.
Yeah.
Well, we had said that these episodes would be about as long as a couple of episodes of Daniel Tiger, and we are quite a bit over that time. Well, we hope that you gleaned something from this. If nothing else, make sure that you invest some time into discovering something about yourself you may not have known. You may have strengths that you didn't know were a part of your personality, or you may be feeling chronically frustrated by something that one of these profiles may be able to help break through for you in your relationship or personally.
Yeah, totally. Learning more about yourself is only beneficial. I mean, I'm feeling like my late 20s heading into my 30s are just giving me so much confidence only just because I know myself so much more now. Like, I wish that my early 20s self was this self-aware, the risk of saying self 100 times.
Well, before we close out, was there anything that you ran into this week, Hannah, that sounded like a good idea at the time?
It sounded like a good idea to me to really plan out our Halloween costumes. Luckily, our friend over here in the neighborhood found me a Batman costume for Milan for $5 on Facebook. So that was a win. But I found it like 3 to 4 weeks ago. So for this much time, I've been having to tell him like just wear it in the house because I just knew he was going to like tear it to pieces. And I'm like, just November 1st, you can do that. Just wait. So, and for Maya, I was just sure that she like ever since we saw Moana, we're like, she looks like Maya. Yes. We have got to have her be baby Moana for Halloween. And our same neighbor even had a Moana costume, which I've had ready. She has everything. And I thought that I would wake up today and it would be such a fun holiday and we would have a relaxed day. And I took them to IHOP to do a fun breakfast thing. And then like IHOP does some sort of free pancake thing. And then we went to the playground and I got home burnt out and it was not even lunch.
Oh, no.
It was like 12. And then for the rest of the afternoon, they were like overstimulated. By the time it came time to dress up to go out trick or treating, Maya was screaming, refused to put on her costume at all. Thankfully, I got her in some clothes and just didn't. It was just it was a downhill. Once we got outside, everything was fine. But inside, there was a whole lot of
battleground.
Scenario of, oh my gosh, I hope the neighbors can't hear us. We are losing it.
That's pretty good. That's a good one. Well, she looks cute in whatever she wears, and she's also a problem solver, and so are you.
She's a problem solver, that's for sure. What sounded like a good idea to you this week?
Well, I always like to maximize my time, and we have a nanny on Tuesdays and Wednesdays from 9 to 4 so I can meet with my clients. And on Tuesday, I have a little chunk of time after my last meeting that I usually use for errands or, you know, checking out the stacks of the library. And I decided to pack my workout clothes the night before so I could just head straight to the gym before I picked up the girls. It sounded like a good idea at the time to pack it at midnight. And when I finally got to the gym around 3 o'clock that afternoon, I realized that I had not packed myself any pants. But undeterred, I felt like my skinny jeans would be just fine, just fine. So I had on my sports bra, a very clearly workout top, black skinny jeans and sneakers, and decided to just ride a recumbent bike because I didn't want to look like a fool on an elliptical or a treadmill.
You really avoided that hurdle.
No one thought I looked ridiculous, which that was just, frankly, it wasn't a good idea. I had to unbutton my pants. I had to unzip my pants.
Weird.
I know, it's bizarre. I kind of kept sliding around. So the thing is this, workout clothes are best used for working out or going to Target, whatever, no judgment.
It's weird. Yeah.
But regular clothes are not meant for the gym.
Yep. Fair. That feels like someone should have seen that coming, I guess.
Well, thanks everybody for tuning in to our very first episode of It Sounded Like a Good Idea at the Time. Again, I'm Caroline.
And I'm Hannah.
And we're so glad that you joined us. please, if you have a minute, you can find us anywhere that you listen to your podcast. You can subscribe, leave us a review.
A good one.
Yeah, definitely a good one. And then tell your friends to tune in.
Yes, please. We would love that. And we would love to hear from you. Find us on Instagram at A Good Idea Pod and share with us some of your stories that sounded like a good idea at the time. Share them on your stories or your Instagram and hashtag us and we'll find them and maybe talk about them. Because if we can't all laugh about this together, what's even the point?
There is no point. All right. We'll catch us here next week.
See you later.
Bye.